Involvement with the criminal justice system is life-changing. It matters.
Having a justice system that works is a really important part of a democratic society.
I'm Penelope Gibbs, Director of Transform Justice.
I'm Rob Allen. I've worked in and around criminal justice all my career.
This is the Transform Justice podcast, throwing light on the criminal justice system.
Hearing from people who know.
It's about whether the system's fair.
And what can be done to make it better.
Today, Rob Allen and I will be looking at government plans to spend $4 billion on creating 20,000 new prison places over the next few years. We're joined by Kate Paradine, who is currently head of the charity Women in Prison, and by Nick Hardwick, Professor of Criminal Justice at Royal Holloway College and former Chief Inspector of Prisons. Rob, where are we at the moment in terms of the number of people in prison in England and Wales? And how does it fit into where we've been in the past?
Well, Penelope, as recently as the early 1990s, we had a prison population in England and Wales of just over 40,000. It then doubled in the following 20 years up to about 80,000.
So we're talking it was low under Thatcher and ballooned under New Labour?
Basically, that's right. This increase, if we do build these new prison places, if the prison population were to go up to 100,000, it would be a record prison population, and it would be very high indeed compared to other similar countries in Western Europe.
I mean, the interesting thing is this is a planned increase at the same time as in the United States. Actually, the prison populations are coming down.
That's right. Of course, in the US, they're starting at a very much higher baseline, and there has been a much needed reduction in the use of imprisonment there. But you're right, we seem to be dead set on increasing the numbers behind bars over the next few years.
Nick, why is the government aiming to increase the number of our prison places by a fifth?
So there are two big drivers for this projected increase. One is the recruitment of an additional 20,000 police officers, which is projected to increase the number of people in prison. And the second is sentencing changes that mean that people who are convicted today are going to serve a longer sentence than people who were convicted of the same offence a few years ago. So if, for instance, you know, that for an aggravated burglary, 20 years ago, you might have got a 4-year sentence, 4 years time in prison, and now you get 5 years. That, if that's repeated across the system, that's a 25% increase in the prison population. That extra year, I don't think, has any deterrent effect on people's behaviour, but it does, if you spread it across the system, lead to the kind of increases the government is talking about.
Kate, I mean, forecasting the need for prison places is notoriously difficult. Do you think that given these drivers, the government's got it right, that demand will be there for these 20,000 extra prison places? Or obviously for women, which you mainly look at, it's a proportionate increase, but a smaller number?
Well, I'll say something about women in a minute, but just to start with, I mean, this is a political choice. And effectively, what we've demonstrated over the last couple of decades is an addiction to prison as a solution to crime. And what's really clear is that it isn't a solution to crime whatsoever. It makes it harder in many cases for people to deal with the root causes of their offending, whether it be mental health, substance misuse, poverty. All of those things are harder to address from a prison cell. And they also make life much harder when you come out in terms of the stigma and the trauma of imprisonment. If you look at what the government are choosing to do, what they are choosing to do is to build in demand and create demand, and therefore to justify the spending of £4 billion on prisons. And what we argue for is that all of that money for men and women should be being invested in community-based solutions to address the root causes of offending, not in building more prison places, which will inevitably be filled.
Yeah, because people talk about prison places in like the M25, that if you create an extra lane for the M25, you'll get the extra traffic. You won't actually decrease congestion at all.
Yeah, I mean, that's right, Penelope. And if you take just one really small example, in HMP Bronzefield about a month ago, an inspection report was published about Bronzefield. And in that inspection, they found that 86 women had been in that prison simply because there weren't acute mental health facilities in the community. That is where we should be focusing our attention in terms of demand, because we find it interesting that there always appears to be place in prison one way or another. And yet mental health is a service that is woefully underfunded and is a direct route into prison.
Nick, you were talking about the drivers of this apparent need for new prison places. Do you think it's the right way to spend £4 billion, or do you think the government have no choice and they have to do it?
I mean, I agree with what Kate said, largely. This is a choice that's been made. I mean, it's an absolutely counterproductive way of spending this money. But I think it's wider than just a government problem. I mean, I'm concerned that, you know, right across the sort of political spectrum, I think our reaction to behaviours that we don't approve of and that are, you know, potentially very damaging, it's only prison we talk of as the answer, right across the spectrum. And I think part of what we need to do is go back to the idea that prison really should be for people who are dangerous or whose behaviour is so egregious there's no other way of marking that a penalty. But we shouldn't see it as the automatic and only way that we show our disapproval of behaviours we don't like. And there's no reason, you know, even if we think, okay, you've done some appalling thing and you do deserve to be punished, I don't have a problem with that. But why do we feel we need to punish them for longer now than we did under, as you said, under kind of Thatcherism, who was hardly a kind of wishy-washy liberal? And I think that change has happened really without any debate or any discussion. You know, we've got ourselves into this situation where we're spending these vast amounts of money without really a kind of wider public debate about what it's for and whether it works and what the alternatives are.
Why do you think there hasn't been that kind of debate? It's a large sum of money by any standards. It's a big expansion, and it's just kind of happening. Why hasn't there been the sort of public debate you might have expected on something as significant as this?
Well, my own view is that I think people like myself who are interested in prison reform and do think the prison population is too high, I think have been too slow to articulate the harms that crime causes and people's justified anger at some of these offences. And then because we aren't comfortable admitting that, I think we absent ourselves from the debate about what should happen with people who do these things. And I don't think we're credible sometimes to, you know, the wider population who are affected by these offences. And that's left the space free for people who think prison is the only answer. So I think part of the way we have to enter that debate is say, yes, these are terrible things for which the individuals who've committed them are responsible. But if we accept that, there are other ways of dealing with those behaviours than simply saying prison is the only answer.
Mm. Kate, what do you think? Would you agree with Nick on that?
I do think that Nick makes a really good point, but there's a couple of points that I wanted to pick up on there. One is about the issue about really terrible things and people being sent to prison. And we know that the vast majority of, for example, women, the vast majority of sentenced women are there for really quite low-level offending, theft, including shoplifting, and things like truancy, not getting your children to school. Do we really think that sending someone to prison for not getting their children to school is a suitable solution? One thing it certainly won't do is help get a child to school. And I think there are lots of things like that around poverty and the criminalisation of poverty, for example, that need to be spoken about more. And we need, Nick's right, to talk about the impact of offending, but also about the fact that many of the people in prison are also victims of crime themselves. Most women in prison have experienced some form of abuse, and that overlap is really important. Nick's right, it is isn't just a political choice. It is about an addiction to punishment just generally. And if you look at child exclusions from school, for example, that's a really important connection, because exclusion from school, like being in care, is sometimes linked to ending up in prison. And this attitude that by punishing people we get change in behaviour, I think, is the key issue that we need to deal with. And we need to think about prisons as being something that is a really expensive way of responding to crime.
I agree, it's a lot of money going to this. I would say that Transform Justice commissioned some research about messaging in criminal justice. And what came through loud and clear is, we want to persuade people that imprisonment is not the right answer. We should use other arguments, but not that it's expensive. And in a sense, I think the government knows that. They know that the public, while they think prison is the right thing, is not going to mind about the cost. Looking at women's imprisonment in particular, Kate, over time, your charity and other charities have campaigned really hard to get a reduction in women's imprisonment and in the number of places available for them. And the government appeared to have embraced your arguments, and they appeared to have said, yeah, we shouldn't imprison so many women. And yet, with this new move, they have said that they're going to increase the number of prison places. Is it 500 more, Kate?
Yes.
Yeah. So how are they squaring that circle of saying that they're going to build more places, which is pointless unless you're going to have more women in prison, and at the same time want to reduce the number of women in prison?
Well, you're absolutely right, Penelope. In 2018, the government published a strategy which was broadly welcomed across the political spectrum and across government by anyone that effectively knows anything about this area. The strategy was basically to reduce the prison population for women, because the government acknowledged that their own evidence shows that it was a counterproductive way of responding to offending, and that actually most women in prison could be serving their sentences in the community and receiving support at the same time whilst looking after their families, including their children. In 2021, the government suddenly announced, with no consultation, that they were going to build 500 new prison cells for women. And the reason why we were so shocked was because all the focus has been on community-based solutions, and actually partly because of the pandemic, but overall the women's prison population has been reducing, and our view and that of so many other partners was that that could be continued to be driven down. Now, the government's reasoning behind why they say they need 500 prison cells is simply because they have 20,000 new police officers on the way. Now, aside from anything else, we need to ask ourselves really serious questions about what those police officers are going to be doing, that it's going to result in 500 more women in prison. Because our understanding was that those police officers are there to be dealing with serious crime, and we wouldn't have expected that to be a result. The government said that it'd done some complex modelling. Well, it actually wasn't very complex at all. It was actually very simple, to the point of being completely wrong, because what it did was overlay the expectations around how many more men will end up in prison as a result of 20,000 new police officers onto women, without taking any account of its whole strategy to make sure that community sentences and community solutions were the focus. So it actually makes no sense.
Nick, it seems that these forecasts that the government have done are just a kind of rather formulaic way of saying, okay, we estimate there are going to be a need for these new places for women, also for children. I think they're planning to increase the number of places for children. I mean, people talk about economics as the dismal science, but isn't this really a bit dismal if really all the government can come up with is we need new prison places to deal with the work of the police?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, it's worth saying that at the moment, the actual prison numbers are below the projected rate by a reasonable degree. So this was very much, I think, you know, putting a finger in the wind and having a guess, right? But the danger is, as Kate was saying earlier, or Penelope, that if you build these places, it is that kind of extra lane on the motorway they'll kind of fill, whether there was an actual need for them or not.
Do you think the government will actually be able to deliver 20,000 new prison places?
No. No, look, I mean, to start with, I think what they've got, as I understand it, reasonably concrete plans to deliver about 10,000 places. So they, if you look at the prisons that either they've got underway or they say they've got underway, then that will give them about 10,000 places, assuming they can build those on schedule, et cetera, et cetera. But where the other 10,000 are going to come from is a complete mystery, right? And I don't think there is any way at all those can be built on the schedule the government is saying. So the real danger then, with the prison system now running at 97% of capacity, the real danger is that if the prison population does rise, as projected, there won't be the additional places to hold people. And so the overcrowding problem will get worse. And I also, to be clear, it's not just a question of physical structures, right? Where are you going to get the staff from? One of the big problems at the moment is an appalling recruitment problem in prisons, with people now, you know, prison service so desperate to get people, prison officers aren't even interviewed before they're given a job. So just recruiting people, the loss of experience prison officers has been very high. And then there's all the other things. Where are you going to find the activities and employment to keep all of these additional prisoners with something useful to do while they're there? It's not simply a question of buildings. It's also all the other things you need to make a prison kind of work. There is not a cat in hell's chance they can deliver this.
And Rob, I mean, you yourself have written a very good blog on this, and you've looked actually at another break on these prison places. Tell us about what you found out about these local resistance movements.
Well, I don't know if I'd describe them as resistance movements, but there's certainly been a lot of opposition locally to planning permission. So at least in three of the sites where they have proposed to build large new prisons, there's been almost universal condemnation from local people, often on grounds of, we don't need a big new institution in this area. It will add to traffic problems. It will have a negative impact on the environment. But some of the objections being, if you like, more principled. Is this the best way to spend money on dealing with people who've broken the law? Isn't there a better way? As with these things, when planning permission is refused, the government can take it back into central government and have a look at it. They may well decide to try and overrule those local objections. But I think actually finding the sites, as Nick suggested, is not going to be straightforward. The other option is to expand existing prisons and simply to try to add new accommodation on existing sites. But you've then got the problem of where you find all the other things. I don't know, Kate, if that's your view as well.
You're 100% right. And I do think that really direct action is something that the government has to take notice of. And local communities are right to say, why do we want this here? This increasingly desperate attempt to portray prison building as a way of getting jobs into local areas is embarrassing, because we know the prisons rightly face a recruitment crisis, because it's a tough job. And activist Angela Davis, who is obviously one of the key abolitionist activists in America, she says prisons don't disappear social problems, they disappear human beings. And communities can see that. Communities know they need mental health facilities. They know that we need housing. So no, I don't think they'll come anywhere near to building the prison places they claim they're going to build with this money. And in terms of the women's prison population and the cells planned for women, I absolutely don't think that will happen, because there is so much universal condemnation of this plan. It is so absurd that I just don't think it could go forward on any scale. There's this story of prisons failing and in permanent crisis, and yet we're building more, and yet we hear very little about what the plans are to put a stop to this at source. And I would love to see ministers talking more about women's centres and how they deliver, for example.
Can you explain what women's centres are and do?
So women's services, specialist services around the country and women's centres provide a place where women can go to get access to support to address a range of needs. Often solutions are geared towards male problems and issues that bring men into the criminal justice system. So women's centres provide the access to an advocate to support you to access services and also direct access to services. And it's proven, which is why the government had a strategy which was about investing in women's centres from 2018, that those solutions and community-based support is more effective at reducing reoffending.
Nick, do you think it's possible that a future, say, a future Labour government or a Labour-Lib Dem coalition government might scale back on these sorts of plans? Or do you think, in effect, they're as committed to them?
At the moment, I can't say it looks very promising. And I think what Labour's had to say about this recently has been disappointing. At the moment, there's a real danger that the political parties are trying to out-tough each other in their sort of arguments about crime and punishment. And I think those of us who don't think that's the right way forward have not yet articulated a compelling enough alternative way of making these things happen to tackle public opinion on that. You know, politicians are saying this stuff because they think it's popular and will win them votes. So I think we have a general climate now where politicians are deliberately pushing crime up the agenda and a more punitive approach. And I think that kind of affects what individual agencies and the courts and the police do, and often in kind of quite subtle ways. So it's not as much, not in necessarily a sort of legislative change. There's just a general change in the kind of climate and tone that's happening that's encouraged by the media and by politicians. So I think you see that happening at the moment. And I think it is worth saying that as you began this kind of broadcast with, you know, we are an outlier on this. Other European countries, their prison population is falling. In the States, the prison population has been falling. There's no kind of divine rule that says prison populations must go up and up. You know, if other countries can bring their prison populations down, why can't we? If actually things are, as the government says, and people have got so much worse, and crime has got so much worse, we need to lock them up for longer and longer. Why has that happened then? Who's responsible for that? What has the government that's been in power for the last 15 years done to create that decline? Right? And so I think we should be positioning an increase in the prison population as a failure. It's a symbol of a failure of how we've dealt with some of our most disadvantaged communities.
Kate, how do you react to the kind of statements Labour's been making recently, which are relatively tough?
Well, if we talk about women and the response on women, it's really interesting because on paper, all the parties agree with the government strategy. But in terms of action, obviously, we have these plans to build new prison cells for women. My view on the party's response to prison building and sort of the tough on crime kind of rhetoric is that it is a race to the bottom that we're in the middle of. And it's a race to the bottom that has been going on for years and years, with successive parties and governments all being complicit in it. And I do believe that the only way forward is some form of cross-party truce. And I know this stretches the imagination quite considerably, but I think if we invested in an independent 10-year plan that all parties could get behind, whichever party ended up in power would be in a much better position, because we all know the reason why justice secretaries change, like some people change their clothes, is because it is a nightmare position to be in, because it's a thankless task. It is continually in crisis and getting worse. So I think the only way forward will be some form of truce, and that will entail following the evidence, because everyone involved in this space knows that we're not following the evidence at the moment. Our criminal justice system is really a source of shame. The fact that in the last few months we've had the Prison and Probation Ombudsman reporting on two babies dying, one in a prison cell and one in a prison toilet, is beyond shameful. And yet, even on that area, there doesn't appear to be a public commitment to change it. So stopping the imprisonment of pregnant women, for example. There are chances for us to tweak the system. With youth custody, there was a massive reduction, and that was through effectively a cross-party truce and an attempt to change that area because it had become so out of control, and that saw a 68% reduction. And now we have a relatively small number of children in custody, still massive issues because many of those children are victims of racism. But I think if we were to adopt that same approach, for example, with women, then we could demonstrate, and then we could move on to the 95% of adults that are in prison, which are men, many of whom are there for the reasons of poverty, mental ill health and so on, that women are.
I mean, I suppose the big question is how to create that, bring about that sort of truce. Nick, what do you think?
I mean, I think what Kate describes is a sort of realistic possibility, I think. If you looked at what happened in the States, until quite recently, the fall in the prison population there was driven by the sort of quite unlikely coalition that Kate describes, where you had people from the Republican right, you know, Trump supporters, and the Democratic left agreed on the need to reduce the prison population. Now, I think what people tell me is that in recent months, actually, that consensus has started to break down. But for a long time, it was kind of delivering. So I think there is a potential for doing it. But I think in order for something like that to work, it requires some political leadership and people reaching across the kind of party boundaries to try and create that. I think that one of the things that may help that is that while, you know, the simplistic arguments about a waste of money may not go very far, actually at a time of, you know, really serious economic difficulty for the country, I think the kind of politicians who are in charge of the purse strings will want to look carefully at whether £3 billion is something they can afford. And, you know, and it's £3 billion on prisons instead of £3 billion on other things, right? And I think you could maybe create a consensus, a political consensus around that, that would then lead to a change of rhetoric that would resonate more widely with the public. So I don't think it's out of the question.
Rob, what signs of optimism do you see?
Well, I'm pleased to hear Kate and Nick being a little bit optimistic. I hope we can have a more sensible discussion and move towards stabilising and reducing the numbers of people in prison. I certainly think on women and young people, perhaps people with mental health problems, there is already a more sensible debate. And as Kate has said, actually a policy to try to reduce the numbers. It's just when push comes to shove, being tough on crime seems to be something that politicians like to be able to say. But prison reformers are always optimists by nature, so let's hope for something better over the coming years.
I also think that it may be that if you focus attention on women and on children and on other specific groups where the arguments may be a bit easier, that might have a knock-on effect to the wider prison population. It may not be that the way to win this argument is in one, you know, fell swoop, but in actually addressing different aspects of the issue, and that leading to a kind of wider understanding and changing culture that prison isn't necessarily the answer to these sorts of problems.
I think there's an enormous amount of hope, and that for me lies in local communities seeing a difference being made. And in the area of women, it's local communities investing in their local women's centre and sort of demystifying prison, because I think one of the problems is it's seen as a national issue. And I think once we humanise and localise the issue of crime and talk about the solutions of crime as local too, that's when prison comes out as the limited and counterproductive solution that it actually is.
I think we ought to stop there. We could talk for many, many more hours about this subject. So thanks very much, Kate, Nick and Rob.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Penelope. Thanks, Rob.
Yeah, thank you.
And if you've got an idea for us to discuss another week, do get in touch. Further information about the government's plans to increase prison places, about our guests and how to get in touch is in our programme notes. Bye.